OU Israel presents...
Come in. Welcome.
Hi, I'm Phil Chernofsky. This is Torah Tidbits Audio for Parshat Pinchas. It is also Shiva Asar B'Tammuz, a fast day today, hence no music in the introduction, and I will go over the policy that I try to follow for the period of the 3 weeks between Shiva Asar B'Tammuz and Tisha B'Av. So let's backtrack a moment. Recording and first broadcast is Yom Chamishi, Thursday, the 17th of Tammuz, 5769, July 9th. Shivasar B'Tammuz, the 17th of Tammuz, is one of the four fasts. There are, just to broaden the picture, there are six fast days in the Jewish calendar. Yom Kippur is the fast, with a capital T and a capital F, the one from the Torah, known also as Tzom, which means fast day, also known as Yoma, the day. The other one that I'm not discussing now is Ta'anit Esther, right before Purim, and that leaves us with the four fast days that are mentioned in the prophets, having something to do with the destruction of Jerusalem and the Beit HaMikdash, the Holy Temple. Sequentially in history, the four would begin with the 10th of Tevet, Asara B'Tevet, which marks the beginning of the siege around Jerusalem. 2.5 years later, the walls of Jerusalem were breached, and that was in the month of Tammuz. In the first temple, it was on the 9th of Tammuz. In the second temple, it was the 17th of Tammuz. Then, 3 weeks later, is Tisha B'Av, marking the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash. And then, subsequently, Tzom Gedalia, which is on the right after Rosh Hashanah, the third day of Tishrei, marks the extinguishing of the glowing ember of Jewish presence in Jerusalem with the assassination of Gedalia. We'll talk more about that some other time, perhaps. But let's go back to the fact that the Mishnah speaks of Shivasar B'Tammuz and Tisha B'Av, and attributes five tragedies or calamities to each of those dates, specifically to ours, we'll get to in a moment. But first, Tehillim, Kuflamid, Psalm 130. Shir hama'alot mima'amakim kraticha Adonai. Adonai shimavakoli, tehiena oznecha kashuvot lakol tachanunai. Imavonot tishmor ya Adonai mi ya'amod, ki imacha hasalicha lama'an tivarei. Ki viti Adonai kiveta nafshi, velidvaro hocholti. Nafshi l'Adonai, mi shomerim laboker, shomerim laboker. Yachel Yisrael el Adonai, ki im Adonai hachesed v'harbe imo fedut. Vehu yifde et Yisrael, mikol avonotav. Achenu kol Beit Yisrael hanetunim batzara uvashivya haomedim bein bayam uvein bayabasha hamakom yirachem aleihem v'yotziyem mitzara lirvacha umeyafela laora umishibud legeula hashta ba'agala uvizman kariv v'nomar omein. I mentioned just a moment ago, specifically Shivasar B'Tammuz today. Let's talk about that first, and then we'll maybe take a better overview of the way the fasts work in general. The Mishnah in Ta'anit says five tragedies. The smashing of the Luchot. On the day of the sinning with a golden calf, Moshe Rabbeinu descends Mount Sinai, where he had spent the previous 40 days receiving the Torah from God, following divine revelation at Sinai, commemorated on the holiday we call Shavuot. And he came down with the two tablets of stone written by the hand of God and witnessed the Egel HaZahav, the golden calf. He either dropped or purposely smashed the Luchot, destroyed the Egel, made a potion which he gave the people to drink, castigated the people for their behavior. 3,000 men were killed on that day in the wake of the sin of the golden calf. And then Moshe returned to Har Sinai to ask for God's forgiveness on behalf of the people. That is one of the five calamities associated with Shivasar Batamuz. I mentioned earlier the breach of Jerusalem in the time of the second Beit HaMikdash was on the 17th of Tammuz. Related to that is the third calamity, the cessation of the Korban Tamid. Even throughout the siege around Jerusalem, they were still able to smuggle in lambs for the purpose of the daily sacrifice in the temple. This was considered a very important morale builder in addition to observance of the service of the temple. And Shivasar Batamuz marked the cessation of the Korban Tamid, the daily consistent reminder of our relationship with God and our commitment to Him. And that became singled out as another tragic event of the day. The other two are an idol was erected in the temple before its destruction, which is a form of destruction and disgrace, and a person named Apustamos burned a Sefer Torah also on the 17th of Tammuz. So it is a day of tragedy and a day of mourning. But there's more. We see something noteworthy, especially if we bring Tisha B'Av, the ninth of Av, into the picture. The same Mishnah says five tragedies on Tisha B'Av, the sin of the spies, the destruction of the two Beit HaMikdash, and a few other items which I'm not going to mention now. I do want to focus on the following idea, because it's important for us to keep in mind. The events of the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash occurred 1,000 and 1,500 years after we left Egypt and we came into Eretz Yisrael, the land of Israel. Don't count the numbers accurately, but it's roughly 1,000 and again 1,500 years after we left Egypt. And as such, we would be missing part of the point if that was the only framework of our national mourning. The fact of the matter is that both Shivasar Batamuz and Tisha B'Av are associated with events that occurred when we were fresh out of Egypt, in the infancy of the Jewish people. And I refer to the Egel HaZahav, the golden calf, and Chet HaMaraglim, the sin of the spies, or the scouts, or whatever you want to call them. What it means is that there is historic historic precedent from the earliest days of the Jewish people that marks our flaws in our behavior and in our commitment to God, which at the earliest point are epitomized by these two major sins of the generation of the wilderness, and the reverberation through Jewish history as epitomized by the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash. And we have to remember and be honest that it is not a destruction that we shrug our shoulders and say, woe unto us, how could such a thing happen? That would only be half the problem, or maybe less than half the problem. The real problem is we know good and well why the Beit HaMikdash was destroyed. And even though the Babylonians are the villains in the first temple's case, and the Romans in the second temple's case, the blame for the loss of the Beit HaMikdash must fall squarely on our heads, the Jewish people. We messed up. We turned away from God. There was widespread idolatry during the time of the first temple. There was other sins. There were other sins of various types. And we had the warning from the Torah that the land of Israel will not tolerate certain behavior from the Jewish people, and it will spit us out. More indelicately, it will vomit us out. And it did. And it happened once, and it happened twice, and we are still reeling from the experiences of that second exile, even though we have started a process of return. We have a long, long way to go. Simply put, a siege around Jerusalem by the Babylonians would never have succeeded, and Jerusalem would not have been breached, and the temple would not have been destroyed, if it weren't for the fact that our behavior lost us the protection and the merit to have a Jerusalem and a Beit HaMikdash. And therefore, mourning, M-O-U-R-N-I-N-G, is not enough for a day like Shivas or Batamuz, for a day like Tisha B'Av, for the three-week period in between. This is a three-week period, beginning today, of national mourning for the Churban. But you must very, very soon, after that initial expression of sorrow, must go to the root causes of exile and of destruction and say, here is my agenda. Here is what I have to do. Not just pay lip service to once upon a time, a long time ago, we had a Beit HaMikdash and it was destroyed, but we had a Beit HaMikdash and we blew it. And we got it back. And even in the process of getting back, we blew it. And then we blew it big. And then we lost it again. And whatever steps are being taken today for the Beit HaMikdash itself, the education, the fashioning of vessels for the next temple, the organizations that are trying to build and raise an awareness of the need to go in the direction of a third temple, and as significantly, maybe more so, the two major items on the agenda, which I speak about often, and that is the restoration of Torah to the Jewish people, the bringing of the Jewish people back to Torah, and the bringing of the Jewish people back to the land of Israel. So we've got a lot of things to do and a lot of resolutions to make and a lot of plans to make. And a day like today, Shivas or Batamuz, when our thoughts turn in this direction, is a day to fine-tune and come up with a plan. It could be directly related to Jerusalem and to the temple. It could be related to the quality of Jewish life in a various, many, many different types and ways. Okay, we'll talk more about that shortly. I mentioned before a music policy. Basically, between vocal music and instrumental music, the main objection during the period of the 3 weeks seems to be to musical instruments, and therefore there are many albums that have been produced that are a cappella, vocal, or in Hebrew, vocali, and they are actually recommended and purposely made for the Sfirat HaOmer period and the 3 weeks. Among all of the a cappella music available, I personally favor the songs with a message that fits the 3 weeks, rather than just say, take away the musical instruments, here's a nice happy song, but it's only vocal, so you're allowed to listen to it. And I'm not going into all of the details about recorded music versus live music and privacy of your own home and with other people. These are details that the consultation with a Rav is probably the best way to go, or as we call it, the LOR, Local Orthodox Rabbi. But in general, the major things that are associated with a mournful period are no weddings and no hair cutting. And we'll talk about that as well. With this policy of appropriate music and try to keep it vocal, I have a track from an album called Imesh Kachech Yerushalayim, If I Forget Thee, O Jerusalem. The track happens to be the title track of the album, Imesh Kachech. And it is not just a verse or two from the book of Tehillim. It is also a reaffirmation and a recommitment to the sanctity and the preciousness of Jerusalem as being the heart of the Jewish nation. And on the day that commemorates the destruction of Jerusalem, the breach by foreign enemies of the city, and the deterioration of Jewish life that follows, we will play Imesh Kachech Yerushalayim and listen to it not just as a song, but you're asked to make that same commitment again. If I forget thee, O Jerusalem, Tishkach Yemini, may my right arm forget its cunning.
Na 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 Shalom, Yerushalayim, Tishkach.
You're listening to Torah Tidbits Audio, either on Israel National Radio or on OU Radio. We'll talk a little bit about a connection between Parshat Pinchas and the fast of Shivat Tammuz, and I would like to talk about fasting in general and its place in Jewish practice and life. All this after a break, if there is to be a break. When it's broadcast on Israel National Radio, there is, otherwise there isn't, one way or the other. Be back shortly.
I'm Rod Sterling. You're listening to
Torah Tidbits Audio.
Rest your eyes.
Hi, we're back. I mentioned about making a connection between this week's Parsha of Pinchas and Shivasar Batamuz. The fact is that Parsha Pinchas most often is right after Shivasar Batamuz, meaning it is the first of the three Shabbatot of the 3 weeks period. Occasionally, it comes out before Shivasar Batamuz. In those kind of years, Matot and Maseh, the following Sedras, are split. Usually they're joined, so that Devarim is always the last of the three Shabbatot of tragedy before Tisha B'Av. Again, you have Pinchas, Matot Maseh together, and Devarim, as we have this year. Or you have Pinchas before, Matot by itself, Maseh by itself, Devarim as the three Shabbatot. What comes out of that is that Pinchas is either before or after Shivasar Batamuz, always. And in as such, the thing that jumps out is what I mentioned earlier, the Korban Tamid, the daily sacrifice. The daily sacrifice is a reflection of a commitment that was made at Har Sinai, Mount Sinai, a commitment that becomes ongoing forever. Olat Tamid Ha'asuya B'Har Sinai. It's a permanent, always commitment that was made at Mount Sinai. Revelation at Sinai was a one-shot thing, but it becomes ongoing, and the nature of its ongoing is symbolized by the daily sacrifice, which ceased on Shivasar Batamuz. But in Parshat Pinchas is where you have the command, the mitzvah, the way it was, and the way it should be. Shivasar Batamuz is the unfortunate reality of today. And therefore, the two go hand in hand in contrast with each other and make a message. Now, to expand the message and to get into the nature of a fast day before some of the details, I would say the following. Unlike personal mourning, person loses a parent, the parent is gone, dead to this world, hopefully living a good spiritual life in the world to come. But as far as we are concerned, we grieve, we mourn a loss with the belief that the soul continues living, that there is also sometime in the future a tchiyat hametim, a restoration of the dead to some form of life, which is sort of a merger of this world and the next world. But not for the potential of bringing that person back to life now, other than by memories and lessons. I think I'm getting a little off here. National mourning comes with a very important additional component. There's sorrow or grief or mourning for tragedies that have happened. But as I mentioned before, there is the agenda to do something now, to be proactive in bringing about an improvement in conditions, in national Jewish conditions, which is made up of individual effort as well as a national and communal component, that will bring about a situation which we call the Geula, the redemption. Meaning exile will continue until either an unknown deadline time, in which way God will bring about redemption the way he will do it, which is not necessarily a great situation for us, or we will hasten the Geula, which is good, by individual good deeds, by an effort on the part of people to bring other people closer to Torah, as I mentioned before, and back to Eretz Yisrael, and back to a Torah way of life, so that God will say, and this is just sort of a way of thinking about it, so that God will say they have learned their lessons of exile, and there is no longer any need to perpetuate exile and everything that goes with it, and we could move on to the next stage, which is the rebuilding of the Beit HaMikdash, the restoration of a Jewish Torah life for Jews in Eretz Yisrael with all of the infrastructure that it has. So it's not just mourning a loss, but it is also lamenting the causes of that loss, and most importantly, determining to be part of the process of restoring that loss. And that's a very important idea for a fast day. Let me talk a little bit about some nitty-gritty aspects of fasting, and then put it together with a concept. Yom Kippur, as I mentioned before, is the fast day and the model of a complete fast day, which involves not eating or drinking, nor bathing, nor use of lotions and cosmetics and perfumes, nor wearing of leather shoes, nor of marital relations. Those are known as the inuyim of Yom Kippur, which apply to Tisha B'Av as well, which logically would have applied to all fast days, because that's our model of a fast day. And yet, because of the circumstances that brought about these extra fast days, or should I say returned the extra fast days, let me tell you what I'm talking about. The four fast days that relate to the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash were suspended during the time of the Second Temple. After its destruction, Tisha B'Av, that marked the destruction of the Second Beit HaMikdash, was put back in full force. The other fasts were not. There was a whole complicated thing. Let's not get into it. But it was later, generations later, I don't know exactly how many years, that Shiva Asar B'Tammuz, Asar B'Tevet, and Tzom Gedalia were restored to the calendar. But the sages of the time decided not to make it full force like Tisha B'Av. They actually didn't feel like they had the authority to impose that on that level. So they said, we will introduce leniencies to these additional fast days which we are requiring. Leniency number one is it does not begin from sundown the previous day. It begins at dawn, a significant saving. There were people who were up this morning at 3:45 and 4:00 in the morning and were eating before the 4:15 deadline of dawn in order to be able to fast well today. On Tisha B'Av, Yom Kippur, you can't do that. And it's a significant leniency to be able to start the fast at dawn. Second leniency, only worry about eating and drinking. That is, not eating and drinking. The other inuyim of the day do not apply to anything other than Yom Kippur and Tisha B'Av. The third leniency is sort of a very elastic clause, and that is various and sundry people and categories of people who are not bound to fast on these days. I'm not talking about Yom Kippur. I'm not even talking about Tisha B'Av. But today, Shiva Asar B'Tammuz, pregnant women get a pass, and nursing women get a pass, and people with generally weak constitutions get a pass. It's not as simple as I just described. A pregnant woman, depending on whether it's the beginning of the pregnancy, the middle, the end, whether she has a experience in the past of what a fast does to her, as far as her pregnancy is concerned, as far as the milk production for a nursing woman, the general weakness idea is people who say, I am demolished after Yom Kippur, I'm a mess after Tisha B'Av, and I just don't fast well. That might be a basis on which a question of a rabbi would be asked, and the answer is, in your situation, eat a minimal amount or drink a minimal amount what you need on a day like Shiva Asar B'Tammuz, so that you won't become dizzy, so that you won't faint, so that you won't whatever, have any negative health effect. So it's a leniency that's not a blank check to eat and drink, as many people seem to think. There are situations where people have an attitude of, this is not an important fast day, because look at all the leniencies there is. And yet the Shulchan Aruch, in codifying this, says, notwithstanding all the leniencies which we just described as applying to a fast day, the bottom line is, if a person is healthy and is able to fast and will not be adversely affected any more than just being tired or a little worn out at the end of the day, he's required to fast. And a person who doesn't and says, well, it's only a minor fast day and I don't have to, is considered violating the Jewish law in this case, and it's something that has to be taken seriously. Now, an important follow-up to this, or follow-through to this, is that regardless of whether a person is fasting or not, even if he's not fasting for good reasons or for bad reasons, the fact of the matter is, today, the 17th of Tammuz, is a mournful day. And that obligation is not removed because a person is eating or drinking. One's thoughts of the day have to be on the various tragedies that are associated with the date. More importantly, as I've said several times already, the causes of those problems. When one reflects on the golden calf, one need to reflect on the fact that you had a people who 40 days earlier had experienced the most miraculous and wondrous of experiences, revelation at Sinai, and 40 days later, they were dabbling in something that is terribly, terribly off, to put it like that. And that's something which each generation has to examine itself and say, what are our golden calves of today? And do something about it. And the same thing goes for the various other tragedies that are marked on the day. A plan. Jerusalem was destroyed. Has it been rebuilt? Yes. Is it completely rebuilt? No. And what do I mean by that? When you walk through the streets of Jerusalem and you come across a pizza shop and what should be, in our religious outlook, that any pizza shop in Jerusalem should be kosher and should be welcome to step in and eat, and then you have to stop short at the entrance to a store and see that they serve non-kosher pizza made with cheese and with meats and non-kosher products, and realize that you are not in Manhattan, but you are in Yerushalayim, Ir HaKodesh, Jerusalem, the holy city. Jerusalem, the holy city, is not supposed to have non-kosher pizza shops and non-kosher butcher shops and non-kosher restaurants, but it does. And that is a sign of the exile which we still live in, and that is a sign of the spiritual exile and the spiritual desert that still exists even in Yerushalayim. So have we come a long way? Certainly so. Are we there yet? Not by a long shot, or not by a medium shot, if you get my point. It is something that is part of the lament. As much as I've been talking about what we as individual Jews have to do and we as a community have to do, there is a tremendous need to enlist the support and the generous outpouring of kindness and mercy of God in this equation, so that we can dream and even realize good, solid progress. It's okay to have our own agenda as to how we can hasten the redemption, how we can hasten the rebuilding of Jerusalem, but one must never forget that it requires God's not only cooperation, active participation, and a tremendous amount of kindness and mercy. Rachem, asking for God to take pity and mercy on his city of Jerusalem and his people, so that we should soon see the complete rebuilding in all aspects of Yerushalayim, of Eretz Yisrael, of the Jewish people and nation. The bright side of all of this, and there is a bright side, is that we are promised by God through the prophets that the tragic, mournful days of these four fasts will become Yamim Tovim, festive days in the future, with the rebuilding of the Beit HaMikdash, with the restoration of Jerusalem to the way it should be, and the restoration of the Jewish people the way they should be. This is our light at the end of the tunnel. This is our hope. This is our prayer for a Geula Shlema. On that note, have a meaningful fast and a Shabbat Shalom. Lehishtameah.